Podcast. This is Mark.
This is Matt.
And we're back from what it feels, it's weird. We usually record weekends.
Yeah.
And we just recorded last week and we're recording on Monday, so it made it feel like forever, Matt. I missed you.
It's been, yeah, it's an extra, 24 to 48 hours after we normally.
And it has felt like forever since Frank's record was, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know when we'll see him again.
We rebooted the show and he's like, I'm going to do it part time, blah, blah, blah. And then he likes, come on one episode. He doesn't like the movie we're doing today, which is 1981's Escape from New York.
Yeah.
I don't understand how you don't like this movie. But he's going to, I think he's going to be back next week. That seems like, and he better be because. We announced on our social media, we're part of the Compalooza podcast partnership again this year for our fourth straight year.
And you better participate and put in some work.
Yeah, that motherfucker wants a free ticket to Compalooza being our media badge. You better put in some work. But no, he'll be there. And, so we are part of Compalooza again. We do a live show every year.
Yes.
3 years ago, we had Long from who used to record the Warp Cave and he's been in front of the show and he was on with us, and we just kind of winged it that year, did a live show. We had a good time.
Yeah, it was fun.
The second year we did a live show, we had a cosplayer on. I'm not giving her name because she didn't promote us worth shit. I'm mad at her about it. I know you're friends with her, but fuck her. And then last year we did a live show where we had the 501st join us. We had Brian, yes. Nikki, and Josh from the 501st, and that was a really cool show. And we got extra time on our show because the podcast crew behind us didn't show up. So we got like an hour, 20 minutes to record a show.
That was cool.
And this year we're playing a really cool live show with a really cool movie we're going to cover, which we're not telling you about yet because that would be unfair. You have to wait until the weekend of May 25th, 26th, 27th here in Houston, Texas at the George R. Brown Convention Center. They announced Tom Holland this week.
Yes.
Spider-Man himself
will
be at Compalooza.
We're getting some big names now.
That's really cool. What else? Walter Coggins from The Walking Dead will be there.
Yes.
Orlando Jones, who's been in some stuff. Who I noticed people I'm forgetting. Christian Ritter and Charlie Cox from the Netflix series. Yeah. Jessica Jones and Daredevil himself will be there.
Ray Park,
who was, of course, Darth Maul, will be there. And so Compalooza is always a big deal here in Houston. I've been a part of it for a while. People that listen to the show a long time know I'm the blogger for them, even though I don't know why I haven't updated the blog because I can't access the freaking thing. It is what it is. But but Compalooza is always a good time. Looking forward to it.
Absolutely. I mean the photo ops, the artists that are there, and it looks like they brought on like everyone that ever did anything on Black Panther this year because they are going to try and ride this wave into Comic-Palooza and get this momentum. So the DVD will be released, 2 weeks before Comic-Palooza?
Yeah.
So, you know, they're going to... This wave is still running and, probably get some more people in.
I'm sure they'll have some more announcements between now and then. I don't think Tom Holland will be the biggest guest. He's the biggest so far.
Yeah.
I hope they get some more comic book people. If you're into comics and stuff so far... I mean, there's some people that are names, but nothing I'm that familiar with. So I'm hoping they get some more big comic guests.
Yeah.
Because I like to sometimes get my book signed or art or what have you. You know, last year I got some stuff signed by the guys who created Starman. And so that's always fun for me. So it should be cool. And I'm supposed to be on a panel for podcasting.
Yes.
I don't know when and what time yet, but it looks like I'll be promoting the Rebel Radio podcast on a panel. And,
not a bad thing.
So, Compalooza, it should be fun. Looking forward to it.
You mentioned cosplay earlier. Who's going to be, obviously last year it was Star-Lord. I was one of the Star-Lords out there. And Guardians of the Galaxy was the big thing. Is it, obviously, Black Panther? Is there going to be a crap ton of Black Panthers out there?
I think you'll get your Black Panthers, your Avengers characters you always do. You'll get your Deadpools. Those are always pretty common. I like to see... Now, I'm not really into dressing up. Frank's always bugging me, you should get a Jedi robe or whatever. It's just not my thing. You know, I appreciate the art and the craft that goes into it. I'm just not really into it. And so I think that I like to see the unique stuff. Like 2 years ago, there were some guys that had a Baymax costume. That was really cool from Big Hero 6. There was a Predator 1 year that looked like the Predator. It was really incredibly well done. So I think I like to see the unique stuff like that. The Marvel stuff's done all the time. I think I like to see the stuff that you don't see every day.
I like seeing the stuff off the beaten path as well. I think it was last year or the year before, someone dressed up as the Shoveler from Mystery Men. If you've never seen Mystery Men, it's the one where Ben Stiller and I forget his name. He was familiar with Jurassic Park 3. He was the dad from Jurassic Park 3, basically, and he was a shoveler.
Oh, William H. Macy.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah, and a couple other people that you're like, oh, those are character actors. And there are these just weird powers. Like, Ben Stiller is Mr. Furious. He's supposed to get mad and use his anger to hurt you, but he can never get mad, and he sucks at hurting people until the end. You got the shoveler, and he's awesome with a shovel. This guy who controls silverware, and you have a girl that can control a bowling ball, and it's really these really odd powers. But all right. Weird movie. It was cool to see someone from that. I think you saw someone from... why can't I think of that Jeff Bridges movie with John Goodman?
The Big Lebowski.
Yeah, Big Lebowski. Oh,
you always see somebody dressed like the dude.
Yeah,
like, it's not hard to dress like a dude. You get your underwear, a shirt, and a bathroom.
Yep.
You know, so it's not difficult. So yeah, so we'll see. So Compluz, we'll be talking about over the next several weeks. We don't want to blow our wad, so to speak, on Compluzza today.
Yeah.
And we'll be talking in a few weeks some of our favorite memories of Compluzza's past. As we get a little bit closer. So that's coming up in just a few weeks. So today's show, we got, first off, in case you don't know, the RebelRadioPodcast.com has officially launched it at the beginning of this month.
Yes.
We want you to go there for all the shows and check out our social media pages, our Twitter at Rebel Radio Pod. Buy a t-shirt if you want. We have a store now. Matt's wearing his shirt as we record today.
Yes.
They look really sharp. It's the first time I've actually seen a shirt in person. We have a coffee mug if you're into drinking coffee.
Yes.
You know, buy a coffee mug. So, you know, and that supports the show. We appreciate it. We're still on TrustMeMyJedi.com, which is my website I created, and so that's still a home for it, but we're transitioning completely to the RebelRadioPodcast.com. That's where we want you to go. So we appreciate all the support there. So let's get into things. We've got a lot to talk about today. We're going to talk about John Carpenter's 1981 film, Escape from New York. We're going to talk 80 years of Superman. And we usually do news after movie. We're going to do news early today because there's not a whole lot to go over.
Yeah, not a lot happening.
But first, this came down today. I was just talking about pre-show that Netflix and Universal, as part of DreamWorks' animation deal with them and Universal, is going to make a Fast and Furious animated series. I'm not why, I guess.
Yeah.
Are they going to get Vin to come back and voice Toretto? The movie series is kind of a bit adultish. So how do you do a cartoon out of this? Or is Toretto going to turn into a car like the old Turbo Kid back in the 80s?
Yeah, that'd be hilarious. I'm hoping for something outrageous to make it, watchable.
It just seems like weird. Like, kids don't want to watch a show about undercover cops and gun runners, you know?
Nah, they
so
don't.
What is your audience for this? You know, most kids don't even care about Fast and Furious unless they're 13 or over.
Mm-hmm.
So, but there is a market for adult cartoons, so it's curious how they're going to go with this. You're a big fan of this series that I think is, pun intended, run itself into the ground, so I'm like, why? You know?
Yeah, I felt like they did really good with the first one because it sparked... And I talked to you about this. It's like it sparked a wave of, you know, people wanting to do things to their cars.
These assholes who street race down Fairbanks right here by where we live.
Oh, yeah. And it's like, you know, it was just awesome what it did for, you know, us teenagers at the time. And then the second one was horrible. The third one, not horrible. It kept falling off. And then we get Fast and Furious, and it comes back. And I thought the movie was pretty good. We're pulling Dom out of Mexico. Letty died, but is really alive, in the next
which
one.
Which was ridiculous how they retconned it.
Yeah, I felt like it was, 4 and 5 was pretty good. 6 was pretty good.
Except for the never-ending runway.
Yeah, the never-ending runway.
That's about when it started falling off.
7?
Well, no, it started falling off when... From what was it, a tank or a bridge or something in part 6 and all the way and lands on the car. I'm like, okay, that's about for me where the series jumped the shark. I'm like, okay, that's ridiculous. That's not even possible.
So it's like up until the one where, Brian died, doing the movie.
Right.
Paul Walker died. I felt like they should have stopped there.
Yeah. I didn't even bother with this last one, Fate and Furious. I was like, nah, I'm done.
Yeah, I think they're taking it and they're going down, like Padme told Anakin, you're going down a path I can't follow. I can't follow you. I can't follow you, Fast and Furious franchise anymore. It ended. You know what? It ends for me whenever Brian gave Toretto his 10-second car at the end and he left. That's where the series ends for me now. No more. No more of this new stuff.
You're a bit passionate about it, Matt.
Yes, passionate.
So we'll see. I'm sure more news will come out on it. But, you know, Netflix and DreamWorks, I dig the anime stuff. Like, they're doing the Voltron is pretty cool. They're going to do a Captain Underpants animated series. So, you know.
Have you heard about that Netflix anime that they made? It's a fox. And she works in, like, a peaceful environment. And then she sings death metal on the side.
No, I haven't seen this.
Yeah, it's weird. One of my buddies showed me it. I was like, I've never heard that on Netflix. So I'm going to have to check it out and see what it is. I just heard about it yesterday. So haven't had time to watch it, see if it's legit. But yeah, it's hopefully I can appreciate that anime.
Yeah, I haven't seen that. I'll have to look for that. Netflix is doing some cool stuff. Like, I keep trying to watch the Godzilla anime they put on there, but I haven't had a chance to sit down and completely watch it all the way through.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I say keep the Netflix animations coming. You know, maybe we'll get some cool stuff. Like, I'd like to see them revive, like, you know, I don't know. I still want a Transformers Generation 1 cartoon revived.
That would be cool.
I don't know if it'll ever happen on Netflix. You know, Hasbro seems to be wanting to make Bumblebee spinoffs and these other bizarre...
Yeah.
You know.
Odd characters.
Speaking of Hasbro, you probably aren't familiar with Mask, the toy line.
Sort of.
You've probably seen pictures of it. They announced a movie from F. Gary Gray is going to direct it. And again, with any toy line movie, it's like... It's all about the story and how it comes together and try not to make it just to sell toys, you know, which they tend to do with the later Transformers movies. Mm-hmm. It seems like the first Transformers movie, they legitimately tried, and then the franchise just kept going, sliding downhill. Well, it came back up a little bit with Dark of the Moon, then started sliding back downhill with the Mark Wahlberg ones. And you just never know these toy line movies. Like, we still haven't gotten a good G.I. Joe movie. You know, maybe one day we will.
They put Channing Tatum there.
That's not saying much. God, I hope he never... I know. I hope they never make the Gambit movie with him.
I thought he turned down the role.
He's still sort of attached, but I don't know. So we'll see where they go with all this animated stuff. Another news this week. It's been kind of a slower news week, I guess. I do have two things. I do remember the second thing. But first off, the new Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom trailer.
Yes.
You know, the first trailer didn't... Well, the first couple of trailers... I mean, I was always going to go see it because I love dinosaurs, but I was more like, it's more of the same. And, you know, it's funny. I've seen a lot of stuff on the internet about the new trailer, and they're like, oh, it gave away so much. It gave away a lot of the movie. But you know what? I really like the trailer, man. I think it looks badass, and it makes me want to see it more now.
Yeah, I really like the action. I felt like it did give away a lot of it, but I guess I don't feel the way that I do about it like Genesis did, whenever Genesis,
right,
you know, gave away pretty much the whole plot. But maybe that's just because the plot was dumb in Genesis.
That and it's how much plot do you really worry about getting away with a movie about dinosaurs and trying to eat people? I mean,
yeah,
you just go enjoy it for what it is. And Chris Pratt will cross a few jokes. Bryce Dallas Howard will look like she's lost, and the dinosaurs will eat people. That's what you fucking want.
And Engine is the bad guy.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, what more do you want from a movie based on this franchise that has been a really fun franchise so far? And this will be the fifth film in the series. You really only had one misstep with The Lost World. I even like 3. I know people don't like 3. I thought it was cool. So, you know, I'm down.
I kind of like 3, and I wish they would bring back Grant. I really like Professor Grant. He was a cool character.
Sam Neill, and I like just watching Sam Neill as an actor. He's one of those guys that it's fun to on screen. So we'll see. Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom comes out in about 2 months.
Yeah.
We're about 2 months away from that. So the last bit of news before we get into Escape from New York. You see James Cameron bad-mouthing comic book movies again.
Yes, I saw that.
And it's just like, man, you know, you just mentioned Terminator. I almost feel like James Cameron, because after he did Titanic, he chose to step away and make IMAX documentaries and these other things he did. Then he came back with Avatar in 2006. Does that sound right? No, 2008.
I think it was 2008. Yeah,
2007, 2008. And it's almost like he's mad because he could have been, Cameron could have been one of our greatest directors of all time. And he's a great director, but I don't know if I'd put him with Scorsese's or Spielberg's and stuff. Yeah, he won an Oscar for Titanic, but I still think he could have been even better than he was.
He's second tier.
Yeah. And it's because he had a franchise he built with Terminator and Terminator 2 that he could have turned into his Star Wars or his Star Trek or his Avengers, and he chose to walk away from it and sell the rights. And the studios, Rise of Machines was okay, Salvation was decent. We all know how Genesis turned out. Now he's trying to produce a sequel, Terminator 6, and bring it back to its so-called glory. And it's almost like, that's your fault, dude. You let it go. And now you create this Avatar, which I enjoyed Avatar, but it's also a clone of Dances with Wolves. And you're trying to turn this into a franchise with three or four sequels that I don't know what to make of. I don't feel like we need more Avatars. I'd rather see Cameron do other things. I'd rather see him do the long-rumored True Lies 2 over an Avatar 2. And it just feels to me like he's getting bitter old man syndrome. That's just what I feel. And like he's mad because he didn't create the Avengers or have his own comic book movie.
That makes sense. Because, that's the only thing that explains it, just bitterness.
Right.
That it's a dominant genre right now.
And as an artist, you shouldn't step on other people's art. You should allow their room to breathe for everyone. And when you're bad-mouthing comic movies and other artists creating these things, it makes you look bad. It's if we were to bad-mouth other podcasters, you know, or something. You have to be supportive of people. And
that's why we're supportive of Thorskin Podcasts, because they curse a lot.
They say
and we don't want them to curse at us.
Well, they're British too, man. Like they'll curse us and call us, you know, funny British names.
Do you think they're friends with Pierce Brosnan or
Austin Powers? I like their show though, man. They've got I listened to a couple episodes and they're good charisma.
Yeah,
and
funny stuff.
I don't always understand them because of the accents. I have to really listen, but it's good stuff, man. And we gave those guys shout outs 2 weeks in a row now.
Oh yeah,
man, they better give us a fucking shout out. They do shout outs in our show.
Yeah, they do.
Hear that, Alex and what's the other guy's name? I can't remember, but man, I'm asking for a shout out back.
Yes.
I think that's fair. And I left them a 5-star review on iTunes.
Oh, so hopefully they do the same
for us.
I guess maybe I should do that.
And I'm begging. You know, but
they said pod baby. So we need to find somehow. That
sounds kinky.
It does sound a little kinky.
You know, I don't know what that means.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because if it means anything that has body parts touching, I'm scared.
No, I just think they want our voices touching each other. It's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, entering, exiting.
The Thorskin guys, though, are not James Cameron bitter old men.
They are not.
They seem like cool guys. And if they're ever in Texas, you know, they should come say hi.
Heck yeah, say howdy.
I mean, I don't know we'll ever be in... I don't know where they're at in Britain, London. I don't know. They're probably like in some podunk town. They're like, this motherfucking Texas. Think we're all from London.
London, Texas.
So there's, good dudes.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you ready to get into Escape from New York?
Absolutely.
It's funny. John Carpenter was trying to make this movie as early as 1976. It, of course, stars Kurt Russell doing his best Clint Eastwood impression.
Yeah.
Isaac Hayes, who could drop a pair of panties, the best of them back in the day. What's the chick's name? I forgot the actress's name. I have it right in front of me. Why don't I look? You know?
Adrienne Beau. I'm trying to remember myself.
And her.
I was.
Adrienne Barbeau.
Barbeau. And her
giant boobs.
Yes.
And Henry Dean Stanton, man. He was one of those guys who was a good character actor, would always pop up and stuff. You know, every now and then. And then the late Ernest Borgnine, who is a fantastic character actor. And one of my favorite actors of all time, Lee Van Cleef, who is a little bit older in this role after he did all the Westerns back in the day. But
he sat down at the same counter as the Rifleman.
Yeah.
Rifleman just walked into that saloon, laid his rifle right there on the counter, and asked for a drink. Lee Van Cleef looked him up and down.
Yeah. Dude, Lee Van Cleef, it's almost like he was a star in his own right, but... He almost could have been a bigger star if Clint didn't come along. It's almost like if Clint wasn't there doing the good and bad ugly, where would Lee Van Cleef have been, you know?
That's true.
Would he have been a bigger star? But I love watching him on screen. He's got a charisma about him, and maybe not so much in this movie because it's a part that he's given with not a lot to do. He plays a general. He plays General Hawk, and he basically just goes through his lines in this, you know, but he doesn't get this isn't Lee Van Cleef at his best, but he's serviceable in the role.
Well, he was pretty irritated too. Didn't he hurt his leg? They tried to limit his movements in the movie.
Right.
But, you know, maybe that did add to his character, his sternness, you know.
So John Carpenter was making this film based on After Watergate and the ideas of oppression of society and not being happy with the political climate at the time. So he wrote the film. And he couldn't get it made. You know, studios didn't want to do a post-apocalyptic type movie. You know, well, they weren't the interested.
Dark Star, what didn't do that great,
right?
You know,
and so he did Halloween, which was a big success, and then all of a sudden, the studio's like, okay, we'll make your Escape from New York film.
Then he was hot again,
right? And so in this movie, it takes place in the then future of 1997, in which New York has been turned into a giant prison where they send all the bad people to Manhattan Island.
Any infraction on you, you just get sent there.
Right. There's no negotiating. And so there's this group in there that believes they can get out by getting across the bridge that leads back to the mainland if they capture the president and use him as a shield to cross this bridge that's full of mines. So they shoot Air Force One down. They capture the president. So the Hawk and his men, they want to send someone in, but they don't want to just send military because they actually try at the beginning to go in.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, you better get out. We're going to kill you all. So they sneak this badass former military guy who's gone bad and done some bad stuff, Snake Plissken, who is one of the coolest characters in all of cinema ever created, and Kurt Russell, who purposely tries to capture Clint Eastwood in this. And the studio even wanted Eastwood for the role, but Carpenter was stuck on casting Russell. And Russell owns this role.
Yeah, you know? They wanted Charles Bronson. Yeah, they thought about Tommy Lee Jones.
And Carpenter said Bronson's too old, and Tommy Lee Jones just didn't. He didn't have the gruff that Carpenter wanted in Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah.
So they went with Russell, and Russell owns it, man. Russell had been known at the time for a lot of Disney live action, you know, happy family flicks.
Yeah,
you know?
He had.
And so he wanted to get that stigma off of him. And so Snake Plissken goes in. They sneak him in on a plane on top of the World Trade Centers. And he goes in to rescue the president. And from there, a series of events unfolds. They put a medicine in him to make him do it. He has 24 hours. And if he doesn't get out, the medicine's going to snap in his neck and basically fry his brain.
Oh, yeah.
And if he
jack him up.
Right. And if he gets out in time, they cure him. So he gets in there and he runs into people that he was familiar with back in his bad days, and he uses some of them to find the president and get out of there. Isaac Hayes plays the Duke, like the main pimp ass gang leader of all of New York, Manhattan Island.
There's Romero, who was actually inspired by George A. Romero. That's why he looks like a zombie.
Right. And the Duke is the one that believes that they capture the president, they can get out by holding him hostage on the thing. So the Duke will do whatever it takes to get the president. And the president, though, has a timer on him, too, because the nuclear fusion codes in the briefcase only were good for so long because the president was on his way to a conference, right? If I remember right, with the codes. And I watched it late the other night.
With a cassette.
With a cassette.
Yeah, and that cassette is supposed to play. If he doesn't play it, basically, there's going to be like no more U.S. apparently, or some kind of war is going to break out.
Right.
This is a quest for peace. No pun intended.
Wow, you must have.
I worked that in there.
Yes, you did.
Yes. And what's funny is like I'm hearing Cabby talk in the movie while I'm watching it, and I'm like, you sound oddly familiar, Cabby. And I'm like, is that Barnacle Boy? Is that Mermaid Man from SpongeBob? And sure enough, I looked it up, and, you know, he worked all the way up until the ripe age of 95, died in 2012, still was working as the voice of Mermaid Man in SpongeBob.
Yeah, Ernest Borgnine's been around a long time, did a lot of roles. He's kind of that happy-go-lucky character actor. Like, you see his face in the movie, you're like, hey, I know that guy. He always played really kind of fun roles.
Yeah.
And Cabby is supposed to be kind of the humor of this movie, you know? He believes in Snake Plissken. He's like, I want to help you, Snake. I'm going to do whatever it takes to get you the president and all that.
I love this commentary. Don't go down there, Snake. You don't want to go down there.
Yeah.
I wanted to laugh, even though I'm like, he's just saying don't go down there. But I'm like, why is this so funny to me? But, yeah, some people don't like that about him. Some people that have reviewed this movie, and I was like, I like it. I'm totally fine with it. Carpenter even made the score.
Yeah, Carpenter scores a lot of his own films. You know, the movie, it's a movie. I think if you were to show this to a millennial or something, I don't know if they like it because the action is not as kinetic. It's a little bit slower.
No, it's not.
But it's paced for that time era, and it's still a well-thought-out action film. It has sets where it goes from place to place. We go on this adventure with Snake. There's very little plot hole to it. It all makes sense, you know? Mm-hmm. It's very simple in the structure of the story, but yet there's also this whole world that's created in that they did an amazing $6 million budget. It was all filmed in an old town near St. Louis.
That had burned down.
Yeah, because they wanted to get that dark look to it. And it's just, it's a really just good adventure movie. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know how to call it an adventure movie. Almost an action thriller.
Yeah, like an action thriller. Because, you know, it's, I don't know. There wasn't, like you said, the action is pretty spread out. There's not a whole lot of action. Even the score doesn't really pump you up. Escape from L.A., yeah, that score is a little bit more upbeat. You know, a little bit, you know, get your heart pumping. But this one's very, it's very 80s.
Right,
it's,
oh
it's
yeah.
The only way to explain
and
it.
And there's a part in the film where he gets captured by the Duke. The snake gets captured and he has to fight Slag, this big old buff guy who's like the Duke's bodyguard. And that might be some of the most action in the film is the fight scene, which Snake has to kill this big old guy.
Yeah.
Even the car chase at the end going out of the bridge is really low in the action in some ways. And then Snake, who's going in there, and he gets this rival with the Duke because he challenges the Duke, ends up not even killing the Duke. The president kills the Duke. And because he's mad because he captured him.
Yeah.
You know, and
he saves Snake.
Right. And, you know, let's talk a little bit about Snake and the character of Snake Plissken. Man, this is one of those characters that in cinema has gotten a huge cult following over the years. There's been action figures made of him, comic books based off of Snake, and it's almost like they kept trying for years to return to the character, and Kurt Russell was real busy, and Carpenter was busy, and they did finally make the sequel in 96 that wasn't that good. The sequel's not terrible. It's just like, it's middle of the road, you know?
Well, he does surf a big wave.
Which is, I remember seeing that, and that's the weirdest part of the movie. And, but man, it's almost like this is one of those great cinema characters like Ash from The Evil Dead, or even Han Solo that I wish we would have gotten more.
Yeah.
Because he's a really cool character. Like, I think they did a prequel comic, if I remember, I could be totally wrong on this, where they talked about his origins, where Snake came from.
Well, remember, they cut his origins from the film.
Right.
So there was supposed to be a scene where he's breaking into the Federal Reserve, and then he gets arrested, but test audiences didn't take to it very well, and they were a little confused, and then they realized what went on and why he was appearing before Lee Van Cleef's character, you know, Hawk, when he did, but they scrapped it and said, okay, audiences are getting confused, we're just going to scrap it. So we would have gotten at least a couple more minutes of Snake, but we didn't. Of course, Kurt Russell, he favored the eye patch.
Yeah, he chose to do it. Yeah.
So
even though it fucked with his vision, he still like
felt it. Yeah, he still put it on.
Yeah.
He's like, I can't see you, but this eye patch looks great. It's kind of like, I guess, Talladega Nights whenever he puts the Fig Newton sign on his windshield. This is dangerous and inconvenient, but I do love Fig Newtons. He loved his eye patch. So he kind of made him look like a younger governor from Walking Dead, you know, without the scraggly beard. But it's Snake Plissken. Some people try and say he's, you know, inspired by, or Solid Snake was, you know, from Metal Gear was inspired by him. I don't believe that. He's his own thing.
He was, because in the Metal Gear games, he even uses a alias of Plissken of some sort in one of the Metal Gear games.
Really?
So Hideo Kojima, I think, was influenced by Solid Snake or by Snake Plissken to kind of model Solid Snake after him a little bit.
Konami, then they owed Carpenter a little bit of money then.
Well, you can do a homage without owing someone money.
That's true. So you can. There's loopholes.
I hit some on my phone, but you know, now if they ever do this, this is one of those movies that I think one day a studio will try to remake. You know, I have a feeling.
Weren't they talking about remaking a long time ago, like a few years ago? And you're like, you better not remake Escape from New York.
Well, I think it's one of those doesn't need to be remade, but I think a studio will. It's like right up there with a lot of 80s flicks that don't need to be remade. We already got a RoboCop remake. You know, we already got Predator, and we're getting a Highlander remake. Yeah. So who knows if they'll remake this one or not.
You talk about sequels. Actually, Ghosts of Mars, Carpenter's film, was supposed to star Kurt Russell. It was going to be another escape movie. But instead, they decided to change it up a little bit, and they put Ice Cube in there. That would have been weird with Kurt Russell in there. I think that would have been a bad route to go.
I didn't know that it was going to be a Snake Plissken movie originally.
Yes, it was going to be an escape movie.
I actually don't know if I've ever seen that, because I heard it wasn't very good. I think I stayed away from Ghosts of Mars. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Carpenter's one of those directors that has this huge following, and he made The Thing, and he made this in Halloween, but his later stuff in his career isn't as good.
Yeah.
You know, he had a really huge run in the 80s with this, Halloween, Big Trouble Little China, The Thing, But when he got into the 90s, man, it's almost like he couldn't. The fog. It's almost like he couldn't adapt to the new era.
No, I mean, the vampire movie that he made with James Woods, it just, I didn't like it that much.
Yeah.
I don't know. And, like you said, he peaked early, I guess.
And maybe sometimes that's the way it goes. Sometimes people just, you know, can't adapt to new times, you know? I mean, one of my favorite directors, John Woo, had a real hard time adapting to Hollywood. He had a mm-hmm. big hit with Face Off, but then when the studio messed with his Ben Affleck film, what was that called? A Paycheck. It just sort of made Woo mad, and you know, he had a hard time adapting to Hollywood and moving forward with things. And maybe Carpenter's one of those guys. He still makes films. He still mm-hmm. tours. He tours and plays his music. He does from his films like a band.
Yeah, what's funny is how they released the music on a CD, and he was actually very surprised that they did that, because it's nothing spectacular. It's a good, it's a decent score, you know, just a good. I guess people use it to work or study. It's very kind of like, you know, okay, I guess I feel like I'm transported back into the 80s by listening to this. I wouldn't have a problem if it was just on, but you know, I see why other scores are released, like Star Wars, stuff like that, and this
Halloween score I think is very popular. Oh, it's iconic. Let's talk a bit about Adrienne Barbeau, who plays Maggie. Okay, now I don't know what woman in a post-apocalyptic setting is going to walk around these dresses she wears, but
yeah,
man, they're just there the whole movie.
They're out there, man.
And it's just like,
even when she's aiming the revolver, when the Duke is driving at her, she's like pressing them together and having them just hang low. Like,
and you know, I don't mean to sound like sexist or something, but like, I couldn't help but notice of the whole movie.
Yeah.
And it'd been a few years since I watched this. And I for some reason, I don't remember it. I was like, wow, man, they're just there the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
You shouldn't feel bad, because it's like every shot, they take up like half the screen, right? I mean, like at least 40% of the screen. So, yeah, it's hard not to notice. And then, you know, of course, she showed a lot more in the Cannonball Run. Of course, Swamp Thing. She took a nude bath in the swamp.
Right. That's her in Swamp Thing.
That's her, man. Right.
Okay.
Yeah, dude.
Man, I forgot about that.
Yeah, she releases them. You know, she keeps them to herself in this movie.
She lets them babies go free.
Yes, they have to float in the swamp water.
So, when was the first time you ever saw Escape from New York? Obviously, neither one of us saw it in theaters. It came out in 81.
No.
For me, I think it was probably, I might have not seen this till early 90s. When I was hearing word about a sequel coming out, you know, and I think I seeked it out and watched it. Mm-hmm. I might have seen it before that on Saturday matinee and not really remembered it. But this was not something I grew up with. This was, you know, we always do these shows and we always talk about these movies you grew up with. But I can't say I grew up with Escape from New York. I think I discovered it later.
No, I didn't watch it until 4 years ago. Actually, whenever you mention, oh, they're going to remake Escape from New York, it doesn't need to be done.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I've never seen Escape from New York. I need to see why it does not have to be redone again. So yeah. I was like, or redone.
Remade. I gotcha.
So I was redone again. So I went and I watched it then. And I think I watched it twice because I wanted to, I feel like you miss a lot of things and I had to watch it again. And then, you know, this is my third and fourth time watching. I think I watched it twice.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I just listened to reviews of it as I drive around just to make sure I don't miss anything.
It was pretty well received from critics.
Yeah.
You know,
it was, I mean, it put Carpenter back on top.
Yeah.
You know, well, he had already done Halloween, but it just kind of reaffirmed. And Carpenter, credit to him, he does pretty well with the low budgets, it seems.
Right.
You know, whenever he's given a big budget, he kind of blew it. Whenever he was given a smaller budget, he did really well. The man who plays the president, Preston? Donald Pleasant. He really liked the president having an accent.
Yeah.
He's almost like a British.
Well,
like
the actor is British. I played him. Yeah.
He thought it was funny that he's like, oh, there's a British U.S. president.
let's talk about, there's a scene in this movie that I really like, and this comes from being a big Lee Van Cleef film fan. And, you know, Van Cleef only filmed like one day on this, you know, because it cost him a lot to get him out there. At this point in his career, mm-hmm. Van Cleef only did certain movies. And it's the scene at the beginning where they're in Hawk's office. It's almost like here's a cool guy from the 60s and 70s mm-hmm. with a new cool guy they're developing for the 80s. And it's Kurt Russell and Van Cleef sitting at the table talking. And it's a simple scene of just some dialogue. But, man, I just feel like here's two of the coolest fucking guys on the planet having a conversation in the office. And it's like, who can one-up each other and be cooler, Van Cleef or Kurt Russell? And I don't know why I like that scene. And it's almost like, and you see Russell's Eastwood impersonation come out in that scene.
Is that like Elvis and James Dean having a conversation at the table?
Exactly.
Stuff like that. Yeah, I could see that.
And for people out there that are younger that are listening to this show, and if you haven't experienced Lee Van Cleef, it's the easy answer is to go watch The Good and the Bad and the Ugly because it's a super popular film. But go seek out like Death Rides a Horse or The Grand Duel or Sabata or one of the films where he gets to star in it, and you'll see how good this guy is, man. He's a cinematic star, Lee Van Cleef, and I'm gonna stop rubbing his collective boner and my man crush on
Stroking
Lee Van Cleef.
His ego,
yeah, because he's just that kind of actor that you love to watch on screen.
Yeah,
and this movie obviously has been hugely influential even today. Like we talked about, Solid Snake and being influenced in other post-apocalyptic films. John Carpenter's musical scores have influenced a lot of other film scores and directors over the years.
In fact, there was what was the French film? Was it Breakout or was it just called Escape? Where it was about a prisoner escaping. And I forget which movie, what the movie was, but basically it was Escape from New York. And Dan Carpenter sued this French film and he was awarded like $5 million. Because they took from it. So people like to take, people obviously derive inspiration from other films.
Right.
And this is no different, even went so far to downright plagiarize Dan Carpenter. So
John Carpenter.
Why did I say Dan Carpenter? I don't even know who that is.
Name Ian Carpenter?
But yeah, I need to try and find what film that was, but
I remember seeing something about that when I was looking through notes and stuff too. Escape movies have always played a part of cinema. The Great Escape obviously comes to mind as a very popular one. Even today, we still get movies like, dare I mention Michael Bay and John Carpenter in the same sentence. I know there's film people out there that be like, oh my God, you can't mention a great director. But man, a movie like The Rock could be as influenced as much by Escape from New York as it was Die Hard,
Yeah, for real. I mean, paying somebody or getting somebody a pass so that they can do something for the government.
Right.
That's basically what it was.
And have you seen Escape from LA too, right? And
he sued Luc Besson.
Luc Besson?
Luc Besson.
The guy who made The Fifth Element. So you found it?
Yep. Lockout. Yep. Okay. 2012 sci-fi action film Lockout. Yep.
Besson directed that? I didn't know that. I've actually seen that movie.
Yep.
I guess it had similarities, but it was one of those I watched and forgot, so I didn't really stay with me,
Yep. Judge's appeals court agreed, writing that the main character in both movies got into the prison by flighting in a glider/space shuttle, had to confront inmates led by a chief with a strange right arm, found hugely important briefcases, and met a former sidekick who then dies.
Yeah.
So it's like in that movie, I believe that was the one where the inmates had taken over the prison and he had to get in there and get an important person out. So that makes total sense.
Yeah. A couple of interesting things about this movie. The theatrical poster shows the Statue of Liberty's head behind Snake and Maggie. The Statue of Liberty never gets blown up in the movie.
Never.
Every character, quite often Snake runs into characters that know him and they say, I heard you were dead, Snake. And he says, I keep hearing that. Every character that says that in the movie dies.
And it's a running joke that also everyone thinks Snake is dead. Apparently, he has a reputation for almost getting killed.
And apparently, a teenage J.J. Abrams suggested to John Carpenter that you show a shot of Adrian Bourbeau's dead body. According to rumor that there was additional shot in Bourbeau's corpse that was shot in John Carpenter's driveway and was added after then teenage J.J. Abrams suggested in Carpenter. Abrams saw an early cut because his father worked for the studio that produced the film.
Wow.
And pointed out to Carpenter that Maggie's death was never fully established. So, wow. JJ, I never would have even thought that JJ Abrams had any connection. Like, that's one of those things, like, you're on a trivia show and they ask you that. Like, what is JJ Abrams' connection to Escape from New York? How would you fucking know unless you looked that up or found that out?
I would not know.
I thought that was interesting.
Be like, he watched it as a kid? I don't know.
I guess so. But, you know, this film, though, man, I think it still holds up. I hadn't watched it in a few years. I think it still holds up well. I think it's one of those movies you have to put in your mindset that this was made in 1980 and released in 81.
Absolutely.
And it's a different type of action film than we get now.
Yeah, it's not Commando. It's not Total Recall.
We hadn't gotten Aliens or Highlander or any of those mid-80s movies yet that were starting to change the action genre.
Yeah.
And this fits in that zone. It's got that, because it was written in 76 and filmed in 80, it's got that weird 80s vibe to it still, you know, with like kind of strange characters and everyone's weirdly dressed and boobs, you know, and things like that. But it works in the film. It all comes together into a nice little good science fiction film, you know?
No, I agree. The action, you know, it's you know, he was about to get some action. Our action star was about to get some action. And then the crazies pop through the floor and pull his side piece away.
Right.
You know, so unlucky man, you know, and everyone loves an anti-hero, and he's an anti-hero, man. He fights for himself. He is in it for himself. He tries to get out of there once he sees that the president could be dead. He's like, hey, man, I'm out of here.
And Carpenter envisioned it as a Snake Plissken being a gunfighter in Noah West. And Carpenter was always very influenced by Westerns. Like, he always would think of, when he made movies, how they would work as a Western, then he would put them in their setting.
Oh, okay.
So he did that. He did that for a lot of his films. So he was a big Western influence guy. So Escape from New York, man. This is one of those that I said a few years ago, maybe they shouldn't remake it, but watching it again, if you get the right director and the right star, I could see it being redone, but at the same time, it doesn't need to be redone. I think it's fine how it is. We had the sequel. The sequel is basically a remake in some ways, only he was saving the president's daughter, so the president, you know?
Yeah.
So I think maybe you just leave it alone. I think we're getting to the point in Hollywood, let's leave the classics alone. They're remaking a lot of television shows now. That seems to be the thing. So let's leave these films alone. So any final thoughts on Escape from New York for you?
Nah, man, just a solid film, cult following.
Yeah.
Some say it could, I would say it's a little overrated because for an 80s action film.
Yeah.
A little bit, not much, you know, but it, you know, it's a good story. And, you know, nothing's wrong with an action movie that focuses a little bit more on the story.
I could see the little bit overrated, you know, because, I could go with that, but I still enjoy the movie.
Yeah, very enjoyable.
Not everything we do on the show is going to be 99% perfect films.
No, man, we're not, you know, and then if you have too much excitement, you get Michael Bay.
Right.
You know, and explosions every 5 seconds can only go so far.
That don't even make sense.
Yeah.
So that's 1981's Escape from New York. Check it out. It's on Amazon Prime right now, so you can watch it for free, which is how we watch it for the show.
Yes.
I mean, I have it on DVD somewhere, but I just watch it on Prime.
I need to have it on DVD. You know, it's definitely a movie to own.
So, you know, we are going to talk now, before we preview our next film, Superman just turned 80. Action Comics number 1000 came out this past week. I still need to try to go pick up a copy of that. And 80 years, man, of Superman. And and not only 80 years of Superman, it's 80 years of Lois Lane, too. Let's not forget that importance for a strong female character.
That's true.
To be around with Superman for these long years. So it got me thinking, man, like what are some of your favorite Superman moments over the years from the movies or the comics or something?
My favorite.
The movie is 40 years old this year, too.
Oh, yeah. One of my favorites, obviously, was whenever he fought Zod. I mean, that's a big one.
And Superman 2.
Yes. And Superman 2.
Let's clarify, not the Michael Shannon Zod.
Not the Michael Shannon Zod. Superman 2 with Christopher Reeve. And then, you know, another one is whenever he's weaker because he has to give up his powers.
In part 2 also, yeah.
Yeah, in part 2. Part 2 is probably my favorite Superman movie.
Part 2 is a fantastic Superman film.
And he gets his butt beat because he's trying to stand up for Lois, but he's not Superman anymore. So this trucker just mops the floor with him, and he comes back and he throws that man into the jukebox machine, and I felt like, yes, you know, because he's like, he's Clark Kent is a nerd, you know, and Clark Kent went in there, and that wasn't Superman, that was Clark Kent that threw that trucker in there, and I felt like, yeah, one for the nerd, man. One for the nerd. How about you?
For me, my biggest Superman memories is like one from the comics. I remember being in high school when the death of Superman happened, and I remember rushing over to Genesis Comics on Gessner when the school got out and they had sold out of RA. So I ended up getting like a third or fourth print finally, and that was a big deal, man. I remember that being like the first time, other than X-Men number one, where comics were like a major event.
That was
and it had news coverage everywhere, and it was huge. It was a really big deal. As far as the movies, yeah, Superman 2 is my absolute favorite film. You know, we did a double feature of Terminator 2. I can almost guarantee that sometime this summer for the 40th anniversary of the film that our double feature will be Superman 2. It's probably coming. So we normally don't tell you ahead of time what movies we might be doing, but I'm almost sure that's coming this summer.
Yep.
My favorite Superman moments in the movies are probably, yeah, I really like the Zod fight in the city against all of the Phantom Zone villains.
Okay.
That's a good one in Superman 2. And I like his origin in Superman 1. I like when he discovers becoming Superman, the original Superman movie. I recently rewatched it because I got the extended TV version on Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that Superman the movie is really well done throughout. It's a great music score. I love, as I've said before, as much as John Williams made Jaws and Indiana Jones and Star Wars music, I think his Superman theme is one of his better pieces he wrote. It just goes so well with Superman.
Mm-hmm.
And Hans Zimmer did a good job with his Man of Steel score, but it's just something about that John Williams score that I really love. And I like the fact that they brought it back a little bit in Justice League. You hear hints of it in Superman's theme in the Justice League film. And I also, you know, I'm kind of a sucker, a guilty pleasure for Superman 3, where he fights the weird robot at the end. I don't know, and where he fights himself.
Yeah, so when he fights himself,
when he's drunk and stuff, I kind of like that. I don't know, it was a take on the Red Kryptonite, where it made Superman evil, only they did a little bit different in the movie.
Yeah.
And it's Superman 3 is not a good movie by any means, but I kind of like that scene where he fights himself. And 4 is just terrible. We won't even talk about that.
I thought Frank really liked 4.
He probably does.
Yeah, he likes Nuclear Man.
But Superman, man, 80 years is absolutely incredible for any character. In a couple of years, we'll be coming up on Batman 80 years, too.
Mm-hmm.
And Wonder Woman also. All these characters came out around the same time, almost 80 years ago. And they're still with us today. Here we are getting ready for Avengers Infinity War, which is a big deal, and it's Marvel. But DC, don't take credit away from them. Yeah, they may not be caught up with Marvel as far as films, but they have some absolutely amazing characters that have been with us. God willing, we get to live to see these characters be 100 years, in 20 years from now. And that's an absolutely amazing feat. Because even Marvel doesn't have characters almost 100 yet.
No.
I think Human Torch and Submariner might be the closest ones.
Yeah.
I'd have to look at it. Maybe Captain America, because he was 1931.
Yeah, I believe. Captain America.
But they don't stand. But Marvel, unfortunately, doesn't stand on as long the longevity of some of the DC characters.
No,
yet.
DC, on a lot of things, DC had beaten Marvel to the punch in the comics.
Yeah.
So
I'll try to post it on the RebelRadioPodcast.com. DC did a really cool animated short for Superman's 75th anniversary a few years ago. And it sums up the history of Superman right there if you watch that little animated short. And later this year, we're getting the Death of Superman direct-to-DVD movie. I know we had Superman Doomsday, which kicked off the animated series, which we talked about back when we did our animated DC episode back a few months ago. But they're going to do this more like the comics and more fully realized version with a part two where Superman, the reign of Superman, all that. And yeah. So I'm looking forward to that from DC Animated.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, so that'd be really cool to do a proper Death of Superman animated version.
I love DC Animation.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we had Death of Superman come out, what, in 05 animated?
About.
It wasn't bad.
Have you watched Hell to Pay yet, Suicide Squad?
I have not.
Don't let your kids in the room. It's the most violent DC animated film they've done yet.
Really?
It's really cool. It's well done. It's good. But, man, it's like, wow, it's bloody. Yeah. I mean, Justice League Dark was rated R, but it was, it wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
But this one is, don't have Jake in the room. It's up there. It's even I was like, wow, this is really gory for a comic book movie. And I don't mind that being rated R. I was just shocked that it was that. But Suicide Squad's pretty dark anyway. But it's a cool flick.
They've all had something. It's like, Nightwing gets it on with Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
And she just bends over and he's like, whoa.
Yeah. So, hey, that's the way they go. Hey, yeah. I don't mind being a little more adult. So we normally do a Star Wars news segment, but nearly nothing's happened this week for Star Wars. We're just waiting for Han Solo for the next month. So let's go ahead and talk about our next movie as we move forward, getting ready for Con Palooza. And next week, Avengers Infinity War hits theaters, and you're going to say, well, why are we doing this movie? What does it have to do with MCU? But I'll tell you in a minute. We're going to do the original X-Men.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now seeing the beginnings of another stage of human evolution.
The truth is that mutants are very real, and they are among us. We must know who they are, and above all, what they can do.
We're not what you think, not all of us.
Who are you people?
What kind of place is this?
I'm Professor Charles Xavier.
I built this school where mutants could learn to focus their powers in a positive way, and also learn that mankind was not evil, just uninformed. You'll be safe here from Magneto, a very powerful mutant who believes that a war is brewing between mutants and the rest of humanity.
There is a war coming. You sure you're on the right side?
The future, Charles, not them. They no longer matter.
Hold on to something.
Give up on them. Mankind has evolved, not anymore.
Yes.
And the reason we chose this is because, one, Ray Park is a Compalooza, so yes. It ties to a Compalooza.
Toad.
Two, you can argue Iron Man kicked off the MCU, but X-Men kicked off the current superhero generation craze.
Absolutely.
People always think Spider-Man came first. No, X-Men came first, then Spider-Man. And without X-Men, we might not get as far as we've gotten. Disney bought Marvel. They saw the potential in comic book characters. They were able to do Iron Man and all the films we have now leading to Infinity War coming out. Mm-hmm. And I really think sometimes that would not have happened if it wasn't for the success of X-Men and Spider-Man by Fox and Sony in the early decade. And we're going to talk about that next week. I really enjoy the X-Men movies. They have been perfect. I really like this first one. I still think it's a fun little movie.
It is.
Go ahead.
I really like it. I mean, even, you know, at the beginning, you know, they're talking in Congress, you know, so you have that side of the X-Men universe in there. They introduce Rogue. I felt like it was good that they put Rogue in there.
The way
they
introduce all the characters.
Yeah. I felt like the casting was great.
Yeah, and we'll definitely talk more about that. The first time you heard Hugh Jackman, you're like, who is this guy?
Yeah.
And then that moment you see him at the beginning of the film, you're like, okay, he's Wolverine. And Hugh owned it from the beginning all the way to last year's Logan. He's just was great as a character. And I'm really looking forward to talking about this movie because I want to say I saw it. I'm not shitting you, Matt. I want to say I saw it 3 or 4 times in theaters.
Wow.
I love the X-Men. I was a huge X-Men fan in the 90s. And when I heard they were making a movie, I couldn't fucking wait. And I'm looking forward to watching it again. I haven't watched it. I think the last time I watched it was when I bought it on Blu-ray a few years ago. I think I bought it on Blu-ray and watched it, and I don't think I've watched it since. So I'm looking forward to watching it again. It's a good film. It's a good solid comic book film.
It was funny because you said we were going to do it. You know, you were like, hey, what about the first X-Men movie? And I'm like, you know what? Let's do this. I was like, I just had my kids watch this movie because I was like, I'm going to cosplay Wolverine at Comic Palooza. So I'm trying to grow out my facial hair here. That's why
You're a Mexican. That takes a long time.
It is. So I have to start. I'm making sure that I start the race really early. So everyone at the office is like, you know, what? Is this guy's razor broken or something? Yeah,
he's gonna come to the comp loser with patchy hair. And
like, yeah, man.
Yeah, just don't shave your pubes and put on your face, dude.
Oh no. I will buy the fake mutton chops before that.
That's awesome. So we're going to do X-Men next week, and hopefully Frank is back in studio with us to talk X-Men as we get ready for Compalooza. So before we go, I just want to give a shout-out. I always forget to do shout-outs. We are still in the Tangent-Bound PC network. The site's still under construction, so the link for our show is not there, but still a shout-out to Tangent-Bound PC for supporting us. TheRebelRadioPodcast.com, that's our official site. Follow us on Twitter at Rebel Radio Pod. We have a Facebook group we just started, which you can link to through Trust Me, I'm a Jedi's Facebook page. Mm-hmm. We're still on TrustMeOnJedi.com. And if you go on TheRebelRadioPodcast.com, buy a shirt or a coffee mug. And I might even have a new shirt up this week that supports the show. We make a little bit so we can keep the show going and self-sustaining, hopefully. That's our goal. But as always, thank you for listening. And until next time, this has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
The Rebel Radio Podcast. Just go there and do it.
Sam Jones, Flash Gordon, and this is Rebel Radio Podcast.
This is Walker Simonson. You're listening to the Rebel Radio Podcast.